Chapter 99. A joyful one. Since he thinks of you as his best friends, he wishes me to tell you for him at once. Relations with money, sir? Burst in Cohen, feeling a power of divination which it was a pity to nullify by waiting for the fact. No, not exactly, said Deronda, smiling. Be but a very precious relation wishes to be reunited to him a very good and lovely young sister, who will care for his comfort in every way. Married, sir? No, not married. But with a maintenance? With talents which will secure her a maintenance. A home is already provided for Mordecai. There was silence for a moment or two before the grandmother said in a wailing tone, Well, well. And so you're going away from us, Mordecai. And where there's no children as there is here, said the mother, catching the wail. No Jacob, and no Adelaide, and no Eugenie, wailed the grandmother again. Eh, Jacob's learning ill all wear out of him. He must go to school. It'll be hard times for Jacob, said Cohen, in a tone of decision. In the wide open ears of Jacob his father's words sounded like a doom, giving an awful finish to the dirge-like effect of the whole announcement. His face had been gathering a wondering incredulous sorrow at the notion of Mordecai's going away. He was unable to imagine the change as anything lasting, but at the mention of hard times for Jacob there was no further suspense of feeling, and he broke forth in loud lamentation. Adelaide Rebecca always cried when her brother cried, and now began to howl with astonishing suddenness, whereupon baby awaking contributed angry screams, and required to be taken out of the cradle. A great deal of hushing was necessary, and Mordecai, feeling the cries pierce him, put out his arms to Jacob, who in the midst of his tears and sobs was turning his head right and left for general observation. His father, who had been saying, Never mind, old man, you shall go to the writers, now released him, and he went to Mordecai, who clasped him, and laid his cheek on the little black head without speaking. But Cohen, sensible that the master of the family must make some apology for all this weakness, and that the occasion called for a speech, addressed Deronda with some elevation of pitch, squaring his elbows and resting a hand on each knee. It's not as we're the people to grudge anybody's good luck, sir, or the portion of their cup being made fuller, as I may say. I'm not an envious man, and if anybody offered to set up Mordecai in a shop of my sort two doors lower down, I shouldn't make wry faces about it. I'm not one of them that'd need have a poor opinion of themselves, and be frightened at anybody else getting a chance. If I'm awful, let a wise man come and tell me, for I've never heard it yet. And in point of business, I'm not a class of goods to be in danger. If anybody takes to rolling me, I can pack myself up like a caterpillar, and find my feet when I'm let alone. And though, as I may say, you're taking some of our good works from us, which is property bearing interest, I'm not saying, but we can afford that, though my mother and my wife had the goodwill to wish, and do for Mordecai to the last, and a Jew must not be like a servant who works for a reward, though I see nothing against a reward, if I can get it. And as to the extra outlay in schooling, I'm neither poor nor greedy. I wouldn't hang myself for sixpence, nor half a crown neither. But the truth of it is, the women and children are fond of Mordecai. You may partly see how it is, sir, by your own sense. A Jewish man is bound to thank God, day by day, that he was not made a woman, but a woman has to thank God, that he has made her according to his will. And we all know what he has made her a child-bearing, tender-hearted thing is the woman of our people. Her children are mostly stout, as I think you'll say Addie's are, and she's not mushy, but her heart is tender. So you must excuse present company, sir, for not being glad all at once. And as to this young lady, for by what you say young lady is the proper term, Cohen here threw some additional emphasis into his look, and Tony shall all be glad for Mordecai's sake by and by, when we cast up our accounts, and see where we are. Before Deronda could summon any answer to this oddly mixed speech, Mordecai exclaimed, Friends, friends! for food and raiment and shelter I would not have sought better than you have given me. You have sweetened the morsel with love, and what I thought of as a joy that would be left to me even in the last months of my waning strength was to go on teaching the lad. But now I am as one who had clad himself beforehand in his shroud, and used himself to making the grave his bed, when the divine command sounded in his ears, "Arise, and go forth, the night is not yet come." For no light matter would I have turned away from your kindness to take another's. But it has been taught us, as you know, that the reward of one duty is the power to fulfill another, so said Ben Azai. You have made your duty to one of the poor among your brethren a joy to you and me, and your reward shall be that you will not rest without the joy of like deeds in the time to come. And may not Jacob come and visit me? Mordecai had turned with this question to Deronda, who said, "Surely that can be managed. It is no further than Brompton." Jacob, who had been gradually calmed by the need to hear what was going forward, began now to see some daylight on the future, the word "Isaac" having the lively charm of cakes and general relaxation at his grandfather's, the dealer in knives. He danced away from Mordecai, and took up a station of survey in the middle of the hearth with his hands in his knickerbockers. "Well," said the grandmother, with a sigh of resignation, "I hope there'll be nothing in the way of your getting kosher meat, Mordecai. For you'll have to trust to those you live with." "That's all right, that's all right, you may be sure, Mother," said Cohen, as if anxious to cut off inquiry on matters in which he was uncertain of the guest's position. "So, sir," he added, turning with a look of amused enlightenment to Deronda, "it was better than learning you had to talk to Mordecai about. I wondered to myself at the time. I thought somehow there was a something. Mordecai will perhaps explain to you how it was that I was seeking him," said Deronda, feeling that he had better go, and rising as he spoke. It was agreed that he should come again, and the final move be made on the next day but one. But when he was going, Mordecai begged to walk with him to the end of the street, and wrapped himself in coat and comforter. It was a March evening, and Deronda did not mean to let him go far, but he understood the wish to be outside the house with him in communicative silence, after the exciting speech that had been filling the last hour. No word was spoken until Deronda had proposed parting, when he said, "Mira would wish to thank the Cohens for their goodness. You would wish her to do so, to come and see them, would you not?" Mordecai did not answer immediately, but at length said, "I cannot tell. I fear not. There is a family sorrow, and the sight of my sister might be to them as the fresh bleeding of wounds. There is a daughter and sister who will never be restored as Mira is. But who knows the pathways? We are all of us denying or fulfilling prayers, and men in their careless deeds walk amidst invisible outstretched arms and pleadings made in vain. In my ears I have the prayers of generations past and to come. My life is as nothing to me, but the beginning of fulfillment. And yet I am only another prayer which you will fulfill." Deronda pressed his hand, and they parted. Gutenberg Edition. End of chapter.